This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Anthony Herron.
Who's going to be legit? The guy can play football.
Former NFL defensive lineman Anthony Herron.
It's away from the initial contact, but not the second time. Anthony Herron wrapped him up.
Breaking down the Bears on Fox TV.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
College football for the Pac-12 Network.
Herron, the best of the bunch right now.
Anthony Herron with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Time for Anthony Herron, brought to you by the Gourmet Chili Cook-Off, presented by Chicago Gourmet. It is Saturday night, September 28th, hosted by Sarah Grunenberg. 12 chefs battle for chili supremacy in the Harris Theater rooftop in Millennium Park. Enjoy hot chili, cool drinks, and skyline views with proceeds benefiting the 100 Club of Chicago. Tickets at chicagogourmet.org. He is here in studio with us. Anthony Herron is here to talk football.
I like chili.
Who doesn't like chili?
Oh God, yeah.
But is it a full meal? That's the argument that always happens. I guess it depends on what you put in it. When I make it, it's not a full meal, but I do enjoy it very much.
Beans or no beans?
I'm a beaner.
Yeah, I throw beans in there.
I throw turkey in there more often than not.
You're that healthy because
your turkey.
I like ground beef when other people do it. It's just whenever I get chili when I'm out, I usually eat the ground beef that other people put in it.
That makes sense.
The only time I get turkey chili is when I'm at home. But I'll throw a few tomatoes in there, you know, a little zesty sort of chili sauce that comes in.
I'm sure you're going to get some tickets for this. You know, you're going to head out there, hang out with Sarah Grunenberg because her restaurant is great. If you're in Monteverde,
okay.
In there,
I have not.
Good spot. Really, really good stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah, if you know people who know people, sometimes
I don't know people. Who
sometimes
know people.
She comes out, and she brings some off-menu items. Oh. And sort of says, "Meanwhile, you might want to try this. You might want to try this. Give this a shot," kind of thing. One of those kind of nights.
That's that kind of spot.
Yeah, kind of spot where you
enjoy
those. When you're going there with knowing people who know people.
Yeah,
that's
well. You've dragged me to one of those nights before, and I thoroughly enjoyed it out in Arizona. But this would be something different.
Oh, it was one of those nights you barely survived in Arizona.
That was another one.
Oh, okay. Which night in Arizona was this? The Lenny?
With Len.
Oh, that was fun.
That was.
I thought you were talking about Jerry's Grill with.
There was that
Dylan
too. Where nearly all of us died.
Yes. What did he call it? Treasonous.
Too much gravy.
Yeah. Anthony, this the game for the Bears is setting up to be one that might be immensely unsatisfying in that this could be one where it's like, yeah, of course it was supposed to look better. Of course you were supposed to beat this team. Now what? It's just we're getting to these points of already it's game three and I'm worried about diminishing returns.
If you know the explosive plays that have been given up by Washington so far this season, the lack of pass rush that's been there for their team, it would seem to indicate that Matt Nagy will be willing to allow Mitch Trubisky to drop back and throw the football, and that it should look far more effective than it did opening night against Green Bay. You know, if you go in with a similar offensive philosophy, the execution should come out at a higher level. If you anticipate the pass protection should hold up much, much more soundly than it did in that first game. And as much as anything, which it's only two games so far, but, you know, if every single game is a referendum on Mitch, I think it certainly bears some examination that the wide receiver position really in both games so far this season, you're not seeing separation from the wideouts. And I think that's something that's going unnoticed with the way that over and over again, you know, like the other day, they certainly didn't throw the ball nearly as frequently. When they did it, there was a lot of screens and you know, routes where he really didn't have to make true reads. It was essentially just here's your one route combination and you just get the ball out of your hands. But when there were a couple of open receivers that were schemed open, like Taylor Gabriel on one that he missed, or like the Trey Burton one where they brought the blitz and they had a quick out route to Trey Burton, he certainly missed a couple of those passes where guys were open on short and intermediate routes. But overall, we're looking at just the full scope of the route tree through two games when Mitch has had to drop back into the pocket. Allen Robinson's been the only receiver truly making plays aside from one super impressive throw and catch to Taylor Gabriel in game number one on a comeback route towards the sideline when they did finally move the pocket. So overall, I liked and appreciated the game plan in game two better, but I still, on the straight dropback passes, didn't see separation from receivers. It doesn't stop Allen Robinson from making plays because he's great at the contested catch and he doesn't need to be open. Other guys need to be open, and they're not.
So does that come down to the type of receiver that perhaps Matt Nagy's employing in the offense? I mean, he's got two guys in Javon Wims and Riley Ridley who are well thought of in terms of route technicians. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, burners by any mean.
Right.
But they're probably a bit more toward the Allen Robinson edge of the wide receiver spectrum than they are the Taylor Gabriel, Tariq Cohen, who I'm just kind of assuming is a slot receiver right now. Like, is it something about fitting the quarterback's eye, you know, in terms of style, that type of body, that dude receiver?
I think that's an accurate observation. And to one thing you sort of glossed over there, Tariq Cohen being a receiver, that's effectively the role he's been cast. And it was nice to see Mitch just turn around and hand him the football a couple of times in the game the other day. And we can certainly address that part of it in more detail. But to your question about the role that the various receivers the Bears have and what role they play, anticipatory throws lend themselves to more what are thought of as slot type receivers, smaller guys, shiftier bodies, to them being effective and opening up voids in zone defenses or in man coverage as they may separate to be able to get the ball out of your hands in a timely fashion as they're separating, as opposed to after they separate, when perhaps that allows the defense more of a window to react to it. And right now, Mitch in his development is still at a point where he needs to see it open. He's not a guy until there are certain stretches in games. I think we saw a little bit of it. And I'm talking to you guys about the fourth quarter drive from game one. There was a couple of drives in the second half of the Green Bay game where he sort of cut it loose. I even think back to his rookie year. There was a game they were being blown out by Green Bay where it didn't matter anymore. It was the one game that John Fox and Dal Loggins said, all right, Mitch, just go out there and throw the football around. And he did and looked really effective in doing it. But for him, he's not at a point where he gets out of his own way, where he still sort of robotically has to think his way through progressions. You can see that happening in the pocket. As he's doing that, it's far more difficult to throw with the anticipation that you need to be able to throw with to be as effective as you would like a top-flight quarterback to be. So when he has an Allen Robinson, where perhaps he can throw it in a bit more delayed fashion, or if he stares him down a little bit longer where it's not as dangerous because Allen Robinson's just going to go snatch the football away from anybody else who's near him, then he gets away with it there. When you have these other receivers who he sort of needs to wait for them to declare themselves open, then it's far more difficult for him in completing those passes.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions return to Ryan Field Saturday when they host Michigan State. Kickoff set for 11 a.m. Season and single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Anthony, the inside zone run is an absolute staple of what the Bears do. And when that's not being blocked, it really looks ugly. When we had David Montgomery creating something out of nothing multiple times, coming to a complete stop and starting again rather than flowing with the play, and you get used to seeing how that play works, where he presses the line of scrimmage, sticks his foot in the ground, finds that seam, and falls for 8 yards. Mm-hmm. Why aren't those blocks being made? What's going on inside, especially guard, center, guard, that's just not letting it happen?
That's certainly the focal point of where the blocks need to be made on that play. I would enhance the observation you're making, because I do think the blocking on the interior, especially in game one, but even in game two in certain moments, was inconsistent. But there are times where there's legit movement happening inside. David Montgomery's running style, what we're observing about it up to this point when you watch him, is that even when he does press the hole for a moment, he is consistently looking for another angle to sort of cut it against the grain, sort of something that shows itself as patience, which works out well, especially when you do get legitimately stunted at or near the line of scrimmage. But there are times where just watch James Daniels and Cody Whitehair working in tandem sometimes. They're moving guys off the ball. Now, is it Dallas Cowboys or maybe a defender's 5 yards in the backfield? No, it's not that. But if you get the defender moving anyway against his will, especially if it's a full yard or two like it has been at times, then that's where, you know, there's legit lanes there to run in. Montgomery is not someone who so far has continued to, when there's impact from a defender, from his offensive lineman, whomever it is, to sort of just burrow his head in there and continue to drive straight forward. He's got, like we've been talking about even before he got an NFL carry, great contact balance. That portion of his scouting report, that's proven itself to be true. And the vision is there. I almost feel like he's in a way
overreading?
Overcomplicating. Yeah. Yes, he's overcomplicating the run game.
I was going to ask that because that play design is not, you're not looking for the second cut. It's not, it's checkers. It's not chess. The way they teach that is you can go here, you can go here, you can go here. Whatever looks best, go there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, and you know, I don't want to go down the Jordan Howard rabbit hole, but in the month of December last year, Jordan Howard averaged like 17 carries for 80 something yards last year. Now, he is not nearly as skilled, as sudden a runner as David Montgomery is, but he is more of a straight ahead runner. When the hole declares itself there, he's going there. When the hole doesn't declare itself, but that's where the play is designed, that's usually where Jordan Howard is going as well. And as the plays, the run game in December last season began to get called more along those lines, there were multiple 100-yard games that he had. He was getting in the, I think it was like 5 or 6 touchdowns he had in the last month of the season. The yards per carry was up over 4.5 yards per carry. And that goes to the point I was making about the growth of Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich as run game callers, as run game schemers, and in-game how that's managed. So now they do have stylistically a different runner who's going to be featured. I was very happy from game one to game two and seeing David Montgomery in a game just with a few touches in game one. It was apparent, all right, this is our best running back. They started him game two. I wasn't sure if they were going to give it a few weeks and pay Mike Davis his respect and all those things. They said, no, this is our guy. Let's get him in the game. Let's get him a bunch of carries. As they continue to evaluate the film, and you know, running back.
Why does Mike Davis suck?
Well, I don't know that he does. He had some nice carries.
I think we made him bad.
One.
Connor and I are worried. We had him at Savage's in Bourbon A. And yeah, I think we might have made him bad.
No, he's just not as talented as David Montgomery. Like in game one, when they came out in the second half and gave him a few carries, it's, you know, he was moving people forward. He was gaining a few yards.
So he's better than Taquan Mizell? Because I can't go through this again.
Of course he's better than Taquan Mizell.
Without a doubt. I don't know if he's as effective on special teams as Cunningham was, you know, over the years where he was continuing to get playing time with it. I'm not sure if he's that stellar of a special teams performer yet. That remains to be seen, I would say, in a Bears uniform. But he's effective enough for what's going to be your third running back. And then to the point we were talking about with Tariq Cohen a moment ago, them turning around and handing the ball to Tariq Cohen is a big deal. Because when we look at how, and every week, and you and I were talking about this the other day when we saw each other, Dan, that every week won't look like what last week in Denver looked like. Right. But the willingness to be stubborn with the ground attack situationally and in certain moments, it sets up the cool, the finesse, the clever things that they do. It sets up a jet sweep or a reverse with Taylor Gabriel. It sets up a toss play with Cordero Patterson when he's in the lineup because you've said we are banging you away in the nose. We are punching you in the face over and over again. Here's your traditional run game that you really hate. Like any offensive tackle hates being bull rushed. So then when you bull rush them a couple of times, it sets up a speed rush. It sets up a counter move. Any defense hates someone hitting them right up the middle where that weakness is, where you feel you're most vulnerable. So when you do that a few times in the traditional sense, it sets up all the other very clever things that Nagy and Helfrich like to do.
You know him, you love him. He's Anthony Herron here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We've got him for a whole another segment. I want to get into the matchup here that the Bears face in Washington. That defense just gave away a week one lead against the Eagles, and I don't think they're any much better than hot garbage. We'll get into that. And the Bears defense has been as advertised, but may face some adversity when they get to week 3-2. So we'll talk to Anthony about
that. So we talk about the Dave Chappelle Netflix special. I finally saw that last night.
Oh, you
too.
Did? You watched it?
Yeah, I finally watched it. I don't have a Netflix account. I finally watched it.
You don't have a Netflix? You and Dan both. We got to get you both hooked up with a Netflix account.
Oddly enough, I'm similar age to Dan Bernstein. People don't know this about me.
You're kind of that young
chronologically,
old man.
Dissimilar, but in our souls, we're very similar in that.
All right. Well, we got to find out what you thought about the Chappelle special, too. It's Anthony Herron of the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Anthony Herron brought to you by Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Snack Nuts. Never fried, nothing to hide. We have been talking a lot of Bears, doing some X's and O's, just trying to figure out how to unlock this thing. And
I'm that way with food, by the way, kind of to the point you were making about, like, you know, things you did
habits.
When you were younger,
old
that consuming them
hard.
In a similar volume.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get out of the large quantity of food habits that I had when I was a much larger man.
Yeah, but see, the thing about these NFL guys, I mean, it is not healthy to see a lot of how you have to keep a lot of that weight on the amount of calories that have to be consumed for an NFL body. And
it's obscene.
You know, and I look at it now. I've been around so many of you former players who look like normal human beings again.
At least closer to it.
And when sometimes you look at the guys on the field and you can see the normal human in there somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
like you look at it, it's like, okay, football player, but you like visually now I'm able to melt off that extra 60 pounds or the second head that's around the normal.
Except for Ben Roethlisberger. He looks like a normal person's trying to come out. He's trying to leak out some sort of human trapped inside
Roethlisberger's body.
Or he's going to like molt away his exoskeleton.
I don't think there's anything skeletal about what he needs to molt away.
A big pile of putty.
Really is.
It slings a football.
Speaking of big piles of putty, I'm looking at the Washington defense and thinking that's kind of what I'm seeing here. I know they signed Landon Collins, and that's great. I think Josh,
and Noah Spence as well.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah. Josh Norman is a whisper, though. I don't know that he's all that effective. Where, if you're Matt Nagy and your job for the next 48 hours or so is to figure out how to A, fix your offense, essentially, and B, find the areas to attack on this defense that will also fix your offense. What are the first two or three things that come to your mind?
Don't let Ryan Kerrigan get us. I mean, he's been one of the more effective edge rushers in the NFL for a long time now. He's just never really been on a team of any real substance, and so it's gone underappreciated and undernoticed how great he's been. He's second in all time in sacks in Washington history. He's pretty close to pass. I think it's like Dexter Manley or someone that he's getting ready to pass for number one all time in franchise history a few sacks from now. So, I mean, he's still a quality pass rusher at this point in his career. And that's really the individual from a protection standpoint that you need to say going in, all right, let's make sure we have an extra little attention in key downs and distances to pay to him. Aside from that, you should be able to count on your individuals up front to hold their own against the rest of that crew. And if they don't, then it's a large issue because the offensive line has underperformed to a certain extent this season. Certainly in game one, they were better in game two, still not stellar in game two. You know, there weren't the gaping running lanes that were being opened for David Montgomery, which is part of why his young eyes are still looking for other spots to bounce as opposed to just continuing to press the hole, even at the second level, sort of make something appear when it's not there. But I think you should be able to go into this game multiple weeks into the season with relative health up front. The depth at offensive tackle is still very concerning as it was the entire offseason. But overall, you go into this game and saying, we have an advantage up front. It's the first decided advantage the Bears have had up front now in the third game of this season. I think you should be able to rely on that and say that with that in mind and with the way the secondary is giving up explosive play after explosive play, we can be in attack mode. It doesn't mean forget the run game, though. That's the thing. It shouldn't go back to week one's game plan. It just doesn't need to be week two's game plan. Now that you're playing this defense, it can be some semblance, some combination of the two. It can be both versions of that where it's okay to run on first down. It's okay to run on back-to-back plays regardless of what success was there because you get yourself ahead of the chains. You allow your quarterback in a comfortable position. You put your offensive line as the aggressor more consistently in the game, but you can still say, you know what, every once in a while, let's go ahead. Now let's attack. Now let's set up some of these other things. Now let's supplementally use some of these cute things that we like to do as opposed to that being the main focal point of the offense.
I think the Bears will be in a, I guess, how should I phrase this? Nagy's been all or nothing with some of these game plans so far, right?
Yeah,
we had the passing game, and then there was the running game. And what you're asking is for.
And I really enjoyed the running game. I know a lot of people didn't because it's not aesthetically pleasing.
You're asking for the Goldilocks thing. You're asking for everything for this matchup against the Redskins to be just right.
To be just to be the combination of the two.
But how many times have we had that?
Not frequently.
Right?
Not frequently.
Tampa last year.
But Tampa was hot trash.
Yes, they were.
And in theory, Washington is as well.
True. But you're asking for Goldilocks, so I'm giving you Goldilocks. Yeah. That was the
six-touchdown pass game. Yeah. It wasn't even necessarily like the running game was the star coming out. I don't remember what the rushing numbers were against Tampa, but that wasn't the star of that game. It was, wow, look at everyone being wide open, and Mitch threw six touchdowns. He's the answer now.
And he missed Anthony Miller.
Yes, exactly.
Other side of the ball real quick. I've been trying to get everybody's read on Chuck Pagano after two games because there's not a big body of work for him calling plays.
Right.
Because he called it 1 year, when the league was very, very different. He loves blitzing. I'm not a huge fan. I know there's always something, some magical secret. Why don't they blitz more? Well, when you have Khalil Mack, you shouldn't have to ever, because he's already like having another guy, because he is the power of two human beings and maybe 10 human beings. But looks like this is Chuck, that we're going to have to get used to this, and we're going to have to get used to some of these corners on an island, straight up man coverage. I'm just worried, inevitably, there's going to be a guy running down the field with his hand up in the air, and it could decide a game.
That possibility is there. He blitzed more in game two than he did in game one. I haven't evaluated the what were the sort of registered numbers of the blitz percentage from both of them in totality, but he blitzed more in the second game than the first. Part of that being, we saw the Bears taking, you know, several different versions of caution with the rotation they had within the defensive front and outside linebackers who rushed the quarterback, with the sun shields that they were using to try to make sure the heat didn't get to the guys too much. Yeah. You know, the conditions, as much as they were downplayed going into, which you should do. You know, you don't want to have that be some sort of a distraction or concern for anyone going in. But you could see them taking precautions to try and prepare for the lack of oxygen, especially early in the season, how the heat could end up manifesting itself later in the game. I believe all those different things in protecting Mitch, in the lack of oxygen, in what you're concerned about with Vic Fangio running the opposing defense, all those things, I believe, combined to that very run-heavy, run-focused version of the Bears offense. I don't think it was really any one thing about, well, Mitch can't do it, so here's what we're going to do from a game plan standpoint. That's why I do feel like he's very likely to have a much bigger game this week. But defensively, though, this week's matchup, Case Keenum has been playing pretty decent football.
Yeah.
You know, statistically, he's been fine. He hasn't turned the ball over yet. He's thrown multiple touchdown passes in every game. That being said, he hasn't faced the Bears defense yet. So I do anticipate they won't feel a need to blitz as much in this matchup as they did in week two, because really in week one, they didn't blitz that much either. Situationally, though, and especially as the game wore on and at the second half got a little deeper into it, and you know, Chuck could tell, my guys are getting a little bit gassed. I've got to add to this pass rush. That's where he began to add additional rushers. There were the occasional third down blitz he brought with Roquan Smith. And then as we got into fourth quarter, the Buster Screen was coming on some slot blitzes and looping him in there and getting him involved as well. I don't necessarily get the sense, though, that that's going to be a steady diet. I felt like that was more, not even overall game plan. I felt like Chuck had a read on the game situation and said, all right, we're getting to a point here where they're starting to move the ball. They're throwing it more. They're starting to get effective. And my guys aren't getting home as much. Let me add some people to speed up the process of Joe Flacco. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be where Chuck is blitz heavy as we go forward.
Plus, unless I'm wrong, Buster Screen, the three consecutive blitzes were all over Garrett Bowles' side. So I would imagine you're adding somebody down there.
And a guy who's got five holding penalties in a game
even
already.
Even if my guy doesn't get there, maybe the confusion, the extra man makes him hold somebody just a second
longer.
Speeding
up the process of the quarterback, especially an experienced quarterback where he was starting to get comfortable.
Does a Bears defense, the way it's looked the last 2 weeks, are they close to creating more turnovers? Does that happen for a defense actually? I guess we're close to asking, is there momentum in terms of creating takeaways? But you've seen them get close with Leonard Floyd.
But isn't that a momentum truther?
Well, yeah, a little bit.
Not in game.
And out.
No.
Okay.
I believe within a game where playing harder and trying harder can manifest itself.
Okay. All right.
You can have success beget success when a team starts feeling itself a
little
bit.
But within this question, we're also asking whether or not, or at least I'm also asking whether or not really talented players who are in a somewhat new system start to get things and then just naturally react to plays they can make on bum quarterbacks.
Yes. And especially when you're in a position where you're getting off the field quickly, where you feel like you can play with what my old coach Hayden Fry used to call an extra heartbeat, where everyone is just storming towards the football. You see the first guy secure the tackle, second one's coming in, raking away at the football. Like, Peanut Tillman is such an anomaly where not only are you securing the tackle, but punching it out while you're securing it. Yeah. That's just a rarity. You don't see as many guys doing that. Most of them who try to do that just miss the tackle. Peanut was a unicorn in that way, but usually it's, here's the first guy who, I'm the second guy coming in. I see that first guy who's got the proper pursuit angle. I feel like he's going to get him. Now let me come in and rake that ball away, or punch that ball out from behind, or if I've already been beat, punch it out from behind. But then the interception end of it, like we saw Kyle Fuller make a great play where he's in, it wasn't a full man coverage, but because they ran sort of a crossing concept, he had eyes in the backfield, so he ended up playing off because of the formation Denver ran at him, and he read it well. It was an errant pass, and you know, picks that a couple of years ago he was dropping or deflecting.
Not
he
to
made
mention,
a nice play on the ball.
Ha-ha Clinton Dix did a really good job of getting his hands up, and
yes.
I don't know if he touched the ball or not. I couldn't tell from the rotation of the ball, but either way, he changed the flight
Definitely.
Of the ball because of what he
Definitely.
Was able to do in the throwing lane.
And what I've found interesting at the safety position so far, like game one, you had Deion Bush who was in there in the red zone and got taken advantage of by one of the great red zone weapons we've seen. But Eddie Jackson in week two, he was a guy who was sort of a tackling liability that went underappreciated last year because of all the plays he made. He tackled really well the other day. I hope that continues.
Anthony, thanks for popping down. Appreciate
thanks, guys.
It.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.